everybody. It is February 7th, 2018. And hey, Steph. Steph's here with me.
Hi there.
We're going to have a fun day because we're going to interview a woman who's running in Texas. This is awesome. So I'm just going to jump right in, and I'm going to read her bio, so please excuse me if I mispronounce something. But we're going to interview today Laura Moser, and she's a mother, a journalist, an author, and a fifth-generation Houstonian. I hope I said that right. She's running for Congress.
Yeah.
Cool. She's running for Congress in Texas, Texas's 7th district, as one of the female leaders of the resistance against Trump. She's the founder of Daily Action, a text message service launched a month after the 2016 election, and Laura has mobilized nearly 300,000 Americans to get involved in the political process, some for the first time. Daily Action has notched real victories over the last year, generating more than 250,000 calls to protect the Affordable Care Act. That's so completely awesome. And the success of this venture led Laura, who had never before considered a bid for public office, to take the next step and run against a 17-year Tea Partier incumbent in one of the most diverse districts in the state of Texas, one that Hillary carried in 2016. So that's quite impressive. So hello, Laura. Thank you for joining us.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so glad you're running.
And
you have to win.
You will win.
I am doing my best. I'm doing my best. And I have a really good shot. I'm very enthusiastic. We have 13 days till early voting starts here in Texas. Wow. I don't think people realize just how early our primary is.
Wow.
So early voting starts in 13 days. You're up against six others?
Correct. 7%. That's right.
Okay. And so what are you doing to differentiate yourself from those opponents in the 11th hour here?
Well, I mean, for one thing, this is a traditionally Republican district, so I'm not trying to be a Republican. I will say that is one thing that I'm doing to differentiate myself.
Also, there's one.
I'm running. Yeah, that's a big one. But also because I've had success kind of organizing people, I'm running a grassroots campaign that is very different from the traditional top-down Democratic campaigns. I have about 720 volunteers.
Wow.
And so this is a big, sprawling gerrymandered district. So we really need people all over. And so we have kind of retirees and people in their own communities committed to knocking on doors in their neighborhoods every single day, making phone calls, and just getting the word out, because this has never been a competitive Democratic primary at all in this district, and so Democrats are not used to having their doors knocked or being contacted.
Right.
And they're into it. So we're just trying to focus on voter contact.
So Laura, what made you decide to run for Congress, especially in Texas?
Well, I just, you know, after Daily Action, you know, as I kept doing Daily Action and getting more engaged in the issues every day and really understanding how badly we needed new people at the steering wheel in Washington, it's sort of the be the change line, mm-hmm, where I thought people answering the phone are bad and they don't care what we have to say. So rather than just complain about their indifference to us, why don't I try to change the person answering the phone? And so that was kind of, you know, I say it was my midlife crisis. I turned 40. I turned 40 in the middle of Hurricane Harvey. And I just, you know, I have little kids and I didn't think this was the world they were getting. I thought our country, you know, obviously a very flawed country, but a great country, was getting better and reconciling with its past demons and all those things that we thought were happening during the Obama administration. I just want to fight the backlash that's happening now.
Wow.
Do you find that despite this horrific political landscape that we're living in, do you find that those Democrats that you're reaching out to in your own district and the other 250,000 or 300,000 that you've reached since the election, do you find that they're hopeful when someone like you comes knocking on their door with a message?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I mean, especially my neighborhood, Hillary, it was a 60-40 Hillary neighborhood, and people say no one's knocked on my doors in 38 years. You know, people are really excited that so many Democrats are stepping up. And Texas is, you know, this has become a cliche. I say it so much, but Texas is not a non-voting state. It's not a red state. It's a non-voting state. And people are ready to be contacted. And yeah, there is hope. And we have enough votes here in Houston and Harris County to get rid of Ted Cruz, but we have to show up. So the more people running for anything, the better our prospects. And, you know, as goes Texas, goes the nation. So
That's so true. Of Ann Richards.
Exactly.
You know, I saw you on the cover of Time magazine with a number of other women candidates. What's it like to be considered one of the Avengers running for office?
It's awesome. Love it. I mean, that's what I'm doing. And I knew lots of the women on the cover, and most of them I met, like you, on Twitter. And, you know, we have these support groups for female candidates and very grassroots fundraising ventures that, you know, to try to get a dollar per candidate all over the state of Texas, for example. But no, I'm really proud to have stood up in this moment. And my grandfather was a refugee from Nazi Germany, and he kind of stayed in Berlin for too long because he was a veteran. He'd fought for Germany in World War I, and educated Jewish lawyer kind of thought there's no way this is actually going to happen. And all of a sudden it was almost, you know, he left 2 weeks before Kristallnacht, and that was the last boat out. And when I saw something like that happening to my country, even at the very beginning, I thought, am I going to be a person who stands up and fights? Or am I going to just cross my fingers and hope that we're smarter than that?
Yeah.
And I opted for the former.
I think goodness you did. And I think so many of us feel that way. And women in particular, you know, it's like we've been held down in so many ways for so long, whether it's pay equity or, you know, men trying to tell us that we don't have a right to make decisions where our own bodies are concerned, whatever, having to stay home, being frowned upon for going and working with kids at home, that sort of thing. For women like you and like Jess Phoenix and so many others who are currently out there fighting this fight on behalf of all of us, I think it fuels my fire, and it fuels my desire to be an activist and an effective activist. And like, we fight daily, and we're raising kids who are fighting daily for the good cause and for the goodness, you know, because we can't stand idly by and watch this racist, misogynist, sexual predator make decisions on behalf of Americans. It's not an option.
I could not agree more.
And that's why we're so happy you're running.
Yes, exactly. I had to just echo that because you know, I can't run for Congress because ain't nobody beating Barbara Lee in my district. But let me tell you what, that is a goal of mine.
Really?
Because I feel like I feel like I really could make a difference. And I think that's just what this whole, you know, the awfulness that we've been presented with is like, you know what? You're right. We good people can make a difference, and you're doing it. So that's what I'm trying to say, Laura. And thank you for doing so.
No, I appreciate it. And it's not easy. I mean, I have none of my other responsibilities. None of the rest of my life went away. You know, I still have to do the laundry and, you know, drop my youngest off at her preschool and all of these things.
Of course.
But it's really, it's just really important right now for all of us to do everything we can to fight for our country.
Let me ask you something.
I'll go.
I'm sorry. Did you want to?
No. Go for it.
You know, we always hear that women candidates have a very difficult time. I mean, I would imagine any candidate would have a difficult time, especially from the other side. But do you feel that being a woman has is it different, do you think, being a woman? Are you getting hate? Are you getting love? What's your experience being a female candidate in Texas?
I mean, I've definitely felt huge waves of support from, you know, both in person and on the internet, but also when you're a man, people don't say things about your haircut or how you're smiling or how you're sitting or whether they want to, you know, have sex with you, et cetera. Like, which, as we know, happens to female candidates. Yeah. And luckily, I mean, I'm a journalist and I have written articles on very non-controversial topics like pre-K and gotten really obnoxious people attacking me because that is, my husband always says the internet is the public urinal of the universe. And it is. And like very good things happen there, but very bad things. So I already have sort of a thick skin and I'm glad that I'm getting attention. But, you know, I mean, the other day I also get lots of anti-Semitic remarks posted because, yeah, that's just kind of what Trump has normalized.
Yeah.
Of course. And that, and every time I see something from someone who doesn't know me, who has, you know, I just think I'm glad I'm running. And I'm a little scared of, and I don't even know if they're bots or people, but it's, there's a lot of hatred out there.
Yeah.
And it's harder when you're a woman. But again, I mean, I have a daughter and I have a son, and I want my daughter to have a strong role model, but I also want my son to know you can't talk to people like that. And women are just as strong as men, often stronger, I will say. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just want to model for them how to proceed in the world and how to talk to women and treat women and how to be a strong woman. And I think that makes it worth it. But yeah, I mean, definitely double standards abound.
Well, and it makes what you're doing even more impressive because I can only imagine, I mean, I'm not interested in running for Congress, but... But I can imagine that if I made that decision, that would be part of the decision-making process, I should say, where, you know, it's like, can I take that? I mean, I'm already online as a big mouth and a big mouth feminist and all of that, but, and so I certainly get some kind of hate, but I can't even imagine how much it would increase, you know, if I decided to run. So kudos for you in every way for doing that.
Thank you. Thank you.
Did you happen to march in the Women's March this year?
I did. I marched in Houston, and we had Daily Action organized a rally. That's my text message service. We organized a rally for women of the resistance, kind of tried to bring in women from all sorts of different groups, including, importantly, Black Lives Matter, because, you know, as in D.C., the Women's March here was criticized, I think, correctly as not being inclusive enough of all sorts of different experiences of women. And so that it was really amazing just to get all women who worked in reproductive justice, who worked in LGBTQ issues, and of course, Black Lives Matter. And then it was actually my first march as a candidate, and I got the flu about 4 hours after. I think I shook one too many. I shook the wrong hand. I'm not sure which one, but woke up and then I was down for quite a while after that.
Do you think, you know, I'm a parent too, I've got a son and a daughter, my kids are a little older than yours, but have you had much backlash from your opponents, in particular your male opponents, or a more, and I'm doing air quotes, traditional woman? With like, how are you going to balance this with your kids? Because you started talking about it. You still have to do the laundry. You still got to take your kids to school. You're still, you know, a mother and a wife, but you're also going to be a congressperson. And I want to know how you handle that, because I've seen that come up with some local politicians, people who are running for assembly here in my district in California. And someone, an older woman, actually raised her hand and said, how do you justify doing this with a toddler at home? Have you come up against anything like that? And what do you have to say to, if someone were to approach you with that question?
Oh, people approach me with, I mean, I was at an endorsement screening for a very progressive group. And the first question was, how old are your kids? And how are you going to do this? And I said, I'm just curious. Did you ask the father of three or the father of an infant you just interviewed that same question?
Exactly.
And he just sort of stared at me blank faced. And, you know, and that is what we deal with. I'm really lucky. I have a very supportive husband. He was kind of my greatest cheerleader in my decision. You know, I think he was more gung ho than I was at first. And he said, if you do this, I will, you know, be 100% on duty with the kids. And it's been great for them because he still has a very demanding job that requires a lot of travel. And my kids had never had him as the primary caregiver. And I think especially for my son, it's been amazing. And my parents also live about 10 blocks away. We do not have any nanny or childcare, you know, paid childcare. But my mom teaches at Houston Community College, and she decided to not teach this year to because she knew, I don't think she knew quite how much we needed her, but she's kind of on hand all the time. And so that makes me feel better about not being around quite as much, because the only people taking care of my kids are people who love them just as much as I do. You know, not that their babysitters don't love them, but it's not, but yeah, of course I get asked that all the time, and it's, and it, again, it is harder, but it doesn't mean that that's the first question you should ask a mother running.
And no, 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 no. It comes up all the time though. And I find it infuriating, but I'm happy to hear you with such conviction and strength, because there's no reason why you shouldn't be able to do that job just because you have kids.
Right.
It but probably makes you better at it.
I always recite the stat that there's, you know, 19% of women in Congress, and we're 54% or something of the population. But I think there's only, I think it's only Kirsten Gillibrand, Grace Meng, and Kathy McMorris Rogers. I might be wrong, and I would love to be corrected. Are the only women in Congress with school age children? Hmm. And Tammy Duckworth, senator from Illinois, she's pregnant, and it's the first. And I was so excited to hear that, because most women enter politics, like Nancy Pelosi, after their kids are grown up, and after they're more independent. And it is, there's a reason why they don't, when, you know, their children still have to make dioramas for their third grade class. And, you know, we had Valentine's, my daughter's class did Valentine's Day, and I felt like a horrible person for having forgotten. But then I thought, wait, it's only February 7th. Why are you doing Valentine's today? But I said, all right, make your Valentine's right now. You know, here's some paper. We cut paper in half. And she was very proud and made all her Valentine's. And when we got to school, it was, in fact, the day to distribute Valentine's. And she didn't care. None of her kids, you know, they didn't care that they weren't SpongeBob Valentine's. She made them herself. But it's like there's all that kind of cobbling together that happens. Mm-hmm. And my husband's very good also now at remembering that type of stuff. It's just, you know, it does take a village.
Oh, yes. I'm amazed daily at, you know, I have a husband who is also very involved, and it wasn't always that way. We had to kind of get to that point, but a career is very important to me too. And so we decided to have kids together. So let's do this together, truly. And there are certain things, you know, sometimes you're up all night making the diorama and you got to go to work the next day, and it's okay. I mean, you're probably not going to stay up all night doing a diorama when you've got a vote, you know, taking place in Congress the next morning, but you'll work it out, you know, and the babysitters come through. Let me tell you, when I have to work late, we've got someone who, she isn't family. She's wonderful, though. She treats my kids like they're her own. And I can count, you know, I can count on my village to help me get through. And I think that that's going to carry out with you, because at the end of it all, you are just a regular, real person trying to do good for, you know, for the people of Houston and for your district. None of that goes away when you become a congressperson.
Right. And I think my kids are, I still see them a lot. I don't see them as much as I used to, but I think they appreciate it too. They knock on doors with me. They go to events with me. They're not, actually my best friend's kids are much more enthusiastic. They go to this conservative kind of religious school, and my friend's five-year-old kind of sneaked her Laramos of her Congress shirt under her sweater the other day. I'm like, hey, why don't you do that, kids?
I know.
Obviously, I'll let them wear it, but they don't care. You know, they're not.
Well, you're just mom.
Every time they go to the grocery store, they hand out, you know, push cards and stuff. And I'm trying to get my kids to be that enthusiastic, but they get it. They understand that it's what I'm doing matters.
Yeah.
And for sure. That's not lost on them. What do you say when you stand up, when you're stumping? Like, what's the big message? Like, if you had to have, you know, if there was an elevator pitch on why Laura Moser is the one, what do you say on behalf of yourself when you're out there trying to sell somebody or earn someone's vote?
Well, so I say, because traditionally Republican district, I say we're not going to win by compromising our values, because our values are shared by the majority of the American people. And I'm running on a platform of decency and respect and dignity for all people. And the things that the Republican Party in Texas have been pushing are not beneficial to any of us. I mean, especially Hurricane Harvey hit us so hard. And the person who's representing this district is hung up on concealed carry reciprocity and 6-week abortion bans and all these things that are not bringing this district the funding and the infrastructure that we need to survive. Mm-hmm. So I just say, you know, I'm not going to compromise on my values because we agree that things, you know, healthcare, Social Security, education, those are not left-right issues. They've mm-hmm. become polarized, but I'm sort of the straight talking person.
Those are the issues that you're passionate about, the healthcare, the climate and all of that, correct?
Yes. And then that are necessary to address for the survival of this district.
I can imagine it would be difficult, but as you said, I mean, we all, you know, I think if we had the opportunity to all sit down and talk just as human beings and not even talk about partisan, you know, Democrat versus Republican, I think we could all probably agree on a lot of things as far as what we want out of our life. It's just about how we're going to get there. That's where the big argument comes in. And unfortunately, it's become so divided that if you even suggest, you know, affordable birth control or something like that, that's like sends people over, you know, over the edge and they get angry or whatever it is. I know I wanted to ask you this, living in Texas, I'm sure you know that there are a lot of, reproductive clinics, women's clinics that have closed down. Is there anything that you're going to be able to do when you're elected to help change that?
I hope so.
That's
why I'm running. Yeah.
I mean, I can imagine that would be something that would be difficult to, you know, to tackle, yet it's extremely important.
Yes.
All right. Well, it looks like we're running to the maybe got one more question for you, and then we're going to start wrapping up. So let's go with this one. Let's see. What are your thoughts? I mean, we're approaching a possible shutdown. So what are your thoughts on that? What do you have to say about that?
So I think that it's very difficult. I was in favor of shutting down the government before, mm-hmm. you know, not a 3-day kind of half long weekend shutdown, but a proper Ted Cruz shutdown. I think it's a horror. You know, I lived in Washington during the 2013 shutdown, and we lived down the street from a janitor in the Senate who it hurts. It really hurts government employees when we shut down the government. So it is a matter of last resort. But so I don't know. I mean, there's no good answer, right? We don't control any chamber of government, right? Any branch of government. You know, we have no power. And I don't really think that I would love Democrats to play hardball, but that's not really our thing. We're not. But I don't know. I mean, it's really difficult. We have to do something. We have to make sure these kids stay in our country. And it's the most priority. And I'm also willing, you know, Trump has proposed some pretty preposterous border control measures in exchange for, you know, a path to legalized status for the Dreamers. And I would support those if that's what it takes. Mm-hmm. Because I do, you know, if we say, fine, okay, fine, you can have a wall. He's going to get voted out, I believe, very quickly.
Oh, of course.
And the wall is, they'll make, you know, a yard of wall, and then it'll get abandoned. It's not ideal. We don't have power in the way that we need power. And that's why I'm running, because I want to be in a Democratic Congress or a Congress of sane, reasonable Americans where we won't use young kids' lives as bargaining chips. And we'll actually try to pass laws that help our communities.
Yeah. I'm applauding you.
Yay, okay.
Laura, I want to touch on something really quickly. You said Democrats don't play hardball. It's not our thing. I believe that it needs to become our thing.
I do too.
And I know, and we're not in power, but I fantasize. If I were there, I would be throwing a fit. Okay. And I would be trying to rally my other, you know, reasonable Americans and which now equals Democrats, to do the same. Are you going to go in there? I know you've got a lot of work to do in your own district, but when you get to Congress, obviously you're going to focus on the people of Houston and the surrounding areas and make sure that that infrastructure is built back up and take the focus off of the stupid, dare I say, bullshit with the 6-week abortion bans and this kind of stuff. But when you get to Congress, are you going to commit to us that yes, you're going to play hardball and you're going to take a stand on behalf of the Democratic Party and sort of try to create maybe a new way of doing things?
Absolutely. And that's why, I mean, I always say how much I admire Ted Lieu because he's only third year in Congress, but he really uses his bully pulpit. He doesn't have, you know, he's not a ranking member on any committee because he just got there, and yet more people know who he is than a lot of Congress people who've been there for decades.
Yeah.
So yes, I will publicly commit. And it doesn't have to be a Democratic Republican thing either, because I believe the reason this district is such an opportunity right now is because there's lots of Republicans who are, George H.W. Bush was the first representative of this district. He was very, what we'd consider progressive now on immigration, mm-hmm. on the environment. I mean, the framework for the Paris Accords was drawn up, you know, while he was president. And there are reasonable people out there in both parties who have been left behind. I mean, all we talk about in Texas is bathroom bills and vouchers and all of these things that don't benefit anyone.
Yeah.
No.
But
they hurt people.
They hurt people. And I think a lot of Republicans believe that too. So yes, I plan to stand up for what is right. And that's why I think I've gotten so much attention for my run, because mm-hmm. I don't believe that we win or help people by triangulating on these important issues. Mm-hmm. We win by fighting for American values.
Well, I'm glad that you're fighting, because clearly you're intelligent and you're very capable, and I want you to win. So I want everybody listening to go follow Laura on Twitter, donate to her campaign. And Laura, before you go, please tell us where everybody can find you, and just go for it. Tell us everything.
Yeah. Okay. So on Twitter, I'm at Elsie Moser. On Facebook, I am Moser for Congress. And moserforcongress.com is my website. And we have our last fundraising deadline before the primary is February 15th.
Okay.
So that's when we report what we have raised. A dollar matters. I'm really proud to have 9,000 unique contributions to my campaign from all 50 states, and a dollar from Guam. I love Guam. So if you're in Guam, I will take a second dollar. I will take $100. We really need to win this district and show America that Texas stands up for the values of the decent majority of our country. I'm tired of having the John Cornyns and Ted Cruz's writing all of our headlines. It's time for new leadership and decent leadership.
Yes. Awesome. All right. Well, thank you, Laura. And, you know, we're going to be pushing you, and I'll include all of your information when I get the show posted. So thank you so much for talking to us today.
I appreciate it so much.
Thanks a lot, Laura.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Bye-bye. Wow. I really want her to win.
Oh, hell yes. She's a smart, capable, strong woman who is in the trenches with the people of her district, and she's a decent person, and there's no decency anymore.
Yeah.
And this is what I love about these new district flippers who are all coming out of nowhere, regular people, right? Who are coming up because they are sick and tired, and they were motivated, you know, and all the hate that's coming from the Trump side of things and the GOP, you know, God darn it, we are sick of this. I didn't want to take the Lord's name in vain, but I did. I said God.
I was going to say, you could have said gosh. You could have said, you know, gosh damn it.
That's what my kids say. Gosh darn it. Although when my son doesn't think I'm listening, he says a lot more than that. But what I love is that you know, we have, like, our hate fire is being fueled every day, but we're taking that and turning it into a positive. And so, you know, thanks, hateful Republicans, racist John Kelly, and misogynistic and sexual predatory President of the United States. You've given us this fire, and now we're going to fight you with it. How do you like that?
You know, one of the things Bob, that's Bob Seska, producer Bob Seska, has wondered about, and I wonder if this is true. He wonders if sometimes some of the things Kelly does or says is not necessarily representative of his true feelings, but he says those things to keep Trump happy. I would certainly hope that's the case. I don't know if he's truly a racist. Maybe he is. But obviously, you know, he is there and might be able to stop Trump from doing something completely crazy. And maybe if he plays this particular role, that it's a way to, you know, keep Trump in his good graces and keep his job. And I don't know. I mean, I'm just throwing that out there because I'm trying to find something hopeful about John Kelly because he makes me so freaking angry.
Yeah, but do you think that when he says immigrants are lazy, do you think that's him just playing a role?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I don't know. My gut instinct feels that he's a racist. But then again, if he's between Trump and the nuclear button, and he thinks that saying these things will keep Trump happy and then it'll keep his job. I mean, occasionally he's thrown out the few things, you know, like something about Trump's idea was not fully, I can't remember what word. He used the word evolved, but I don't remember how he used it. But
his stance has evolved. Yeah. His stance has evolved. Yeah.
He didn't bag on Trump, but he just didn't think that his, I think it was something about the wall that he didn't think it was thought through enough or whatever. So it's not that he's never been critical of Trump. He has. But perhaps the idea that sometimes he goes after, like he went after who I can never remember her name. The African-American congressional representative who he lied about, the woman, I just can't think of her name, but he lied about her. And
Johnson.
Yeah. And
with the cowboy hat.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So he lied about her and, you know, she's black. So if he says something shitty about a black person, maybe that'll keep Trump happy. I don't know. I don't know if that's the truth.
I see where you're coming from, but I also think he's a racist.
I think he's a racist. Because
I would never pretend to be a racist to keep my boss happy.
Yeah, no. But I mean, it's not about that as much as keeping him away from the nuclear button. You know what I mean? It's like, I guess maybe if I thought that I could keep the president from going into nuclear war or really, you know, wanting to get, you know, Kim Jong-un all excited and I don't know. Maybe I would pretend to be somebody horrible to keep the nation safe. I don't know. You know, I mean, it's something that, you know, in this day and age, it's really difficult to decipher what's actually going on.
Exactly.
Because everything is so awful.
Well, we don't know. But, you know where we are? We're in a place where when the daily news is like a complete and utter shit show and nothing surprises us, like, how many times a day do we scratch our heads and go, you can't make this up. And now there's a key Trump aide, someone who is in the Oval Office with him on a daily basis, a guy by the name of Rob Porter,
yes,
who just resigned, right? Because they didn't get a security clearance for him, but he's in the Oval Office on the daily and he beat his two ex-wives and now he's dating Hope Hicks.
Yeah.
Can't make that shit up.
No.
You know what I'm saying? Like, these people are off their rockers.
Yeah.
There is absolutely no protocols, the regular way of doing business. The most, you know, if there's an industry where you really need to follow the rules, I would say it's running the country.
Mm-hmm.
And they just, there are no rules. And he does things that presidents before him, I mean, Barack Obama, you know, his biggest scandal was wearing a tan suit.
Getting Dijon mustard.
Yeah.
His elitist Dijon mustard.
Or saluting incorrectly because he had a coffee cup in his hand or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, this guy hasn't shown us his tax returns. Has colluded with Russia to throw the election, has laundered money, continues to launder money while in office, has paid off a porn star. Okay, this all happened since he was inaugurated. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and now he wants to have a military parade.
Yeah, oh, that is not happening.
He wanted a military parade for his weak-ass inauguration, and he didn't get it. And what really sucks is if he does get it, it's going to rip up the frickin' roads, because the roads aren't made for, you know, tanks rolling down. I just, this guy pisses me off so much. The thoughts that I have, I've never had thoughts. As much as I couldn't stand George Bush, or I'd say W, this guy just takes the cake. And I don't want to dismiss or I mean, it's important to note that George W. Bush helped create the environment that gave us Trump. So it's not to say that I miss Bush. I don't miss him. I do miss the traditions and the norms and recognizing all of that. But, you know, George W. Bush didn't demand a military parade. George W. Bush wasn't scolding Democrats and calling them treasonous because they weren't standing up and applauding him when he was doing the State of the Union. I mean, this guy is insane. And I just, I feel like it's getting to the point now where, you know, like for me in 2017, just watching everything unfold, it obviously it was stressful. And we all talked about how news was coming at us fast. And there was the Comey firing and Sally Yates. And I mean, just as one thing after the other, we're constantly freaking out about our health care. I mean, I remember the night that John McCain put his finger down. You know, I was Bob and I were watching television, and it was, you know, I don't know what time it was on the East Coast, but it was like 10 o'clock here, 9, 10 o'clock. And I didn't really want to watch what happened because I was so worried. I thought, I don't want to go to bed with this on my mind if we lose this healthcare debate. And then we watched it and we were all excited. And then it was like 3 days later, they're back at trying to, you know, screw something else over, whether it's healthcare. And it's like endless barrage of freakouts through 2017. But there was a certain amount of, I don't know, newness to it, where now we're fully in the trenches of this war, which I think it's like a war. They have declared war on democracy. And the news is coming at us so much faster. And it's not that I have, I do have Trump fatigue, not to the degree where I'm giving up on it or anything like that, but it's just, it's depressing. And it's scary. It's depressing. It's a heavy, it's like there's this black cloud over the country. I think in terms of what other countries think about us and how much damage we've done, I would certainly hope that when we get a new president that's a better president, that, you know, our standing in the world will go back up. But I think he has certainly done a lot of damage in that, even though I think everybody realizes Putin helped him. But they do also realize that 60-some million people voted for him. I'm absolutely positive that some of those voting machines were messed with.
Were hacked.
But enough people voted for Donald Trump to be embarrassing.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, to be embarrassing, right. It makes it, I'm so proud to be an American, and then, you know, sometimes I'm like, not really.
Yeah.
Well, not so much.
You know, I mean, I say this all the time, but it really does go down to the fact that Republicans have continually decreased spending on education, and that never gets picked back up. And then you add to that all of the toxic radio personalities like Rush Limbaugh, and you've got Fox News. And it's this perfect environment where you can brainwash people and keep them uneducated. And you know, I don't even think all of them aren't intelligent. I mean, there are people that I know personally who are intelligent human beings, but they've been brainwashed. They don't realize they've been brainwashed, and I'm sure they would say that right back to me, but they don't realize because, you know, I'll give an example. There's somebody that I know who recently had an issue with someone in their family about Trump, and specifically about Michael Flynn, and the person who was pro-Trump didn't understand anything that was going on with Michael Flynn. You know, and that person, you know, I don't know where they get their news, but clearly it's not from a credible source because they weren't fully aware of what was happening and didn't have all the facts.
They weren't aware that Flynn has flipped and he will take the president down.
I think that was part of it. Yeah. And, you know, so you've got people who are intelligent, but they just don't have all the information. And then, you know, you get, let's say somebody's a racist. You know, you got somebody who is older maybe and brought up a certain way and has racist tendencies. Well, this administration is going to bring them out more. You know, I mean, yes, I know a member from my family is racist and, you know, it makes it much easier for her to feel justified in her racism. And it's just so disgusting and horrible. And I was so upset because I didn't know she was. I know that she wanted Ted Cruz to win. And during the primaries, she was talking about how much she did not like Trump. Well, now all of a sudden, she thinks he's awesome. So I'm just, and she's
maybe
in my
she
family.
Wants maybe she wants to be. Oh, I'm gonna shut my mouth. Forget it. I don't know how any woman can think he's awesome. I just don't know.
The only thing that I can think is that they are, it's kind of like, because he's the ultimate troll for the Democrats, and I think that they're so anti-Democrat, anti-progressive.
It's hate-motivated. Hate-motivated.
Yeah.
Or it's racist-motivated, or it's money-motivated. Yeah. I mean, there are really only three places you can go with that.
Yeah.
You know? Because he's a fake Christian.
Yeah.
So I'm tired, and I'm tired as a person who, has religious beliefs, and I'm a Christian, and it means something to me, to have fake Christianity, all over the place, from Mike Huckabee to Sarah Huckabee Sanders to Trump. That bastard doesn't pray.
No,
not in a traditional way. He probably prays for, you know, all of his enemies to die. And that's what, you know, but
yeah, exactly. Oh, well, you know, I don't know. It's just something that we're going to have to endure until we don't have to endure it anymore.
Yeah, but you know what? It's not like, look at this. Here's what I'm so excited about. And I know you feel the same way, but let me put a little positive glow on this thing, okay? So we just talked to Laura Moser. Mm-hmm. Laura Moser gives me hope. Laura Moser inspires me to do better. And just to know that someone like that she is not the only one of her kind out there doing this.
Yeah.
You know, that motivates me. And so she, in 13 days, like, we started counting for, you know, we're picking up a puppy on Saturday. Shit, 13 days ago, we were excited. I'm excited now. 13 days. She's got a primary coming up that she is going
to
win. And then she's going
to
unseat this bastard, this pro-lifer, who's probably racist and money motivated. You know, we've got, okay, so then what's next? Then we've got Jess Phoenix in her primary. Then Andrew Janz is, you know, his primary is just down the road.
And Randy Bryce.
And you know, we've got these.
Renato Mariotti.
Oh my gosh. And Renato Mariotti. And we've got these amazing people who, you know, the Alyssa Milanos of the world, the, you know, who stand up and stand and scream out about things like equal rights for women. I mean, this is a time where we are part of an active revolution. Mm-hmm. We're not, you know, punching each other's teeth out. We're not breaking windows for the most part, you know, unless you're a Philadelphia fan, but that's a completely different motivation. But we are part of an active, ongoing revolution where there are highlights that we can plug into along the way to November.
Yeah.
And that's how I'm choosing to live my life when I get that sort of that manic down, that coming down off of, well, shoot, there were no indictments today. You know what I mean?
I know. It's like every day you wake up and go, please let Don Jr. be indicted. Although I think that might be coming in March.
Oh, you do?
I'm hopeful.
Okay, and what gives you that? What gives you that feeling?
Malcolm Nance, basically. I mean, it doesn't. Yeah. He didn't. Malcolm Nance believes big time. He didn't say who, but he
does
believe, you know, big time indictments are going to be coming down in March. And I also think that it just seems to me, and this is a hunch more than anything, that based on the way things are going and the way that news is dropping and the talk of the possibility of firing Rosenstein and all of this, it just seems to me that things are coming to a head. I think that, and not to say that, you know, they're going to pop and Trump's going to be gone and it's all going to be good. I just think that I feel that we're coming to a point very soon where something big is going to happen, because,
yes,
for instance, let's just say Mueller wants to give Congress his findings. He's going to do it. He's going to do it now or soon. He's not going to wait till the summertime when we're just getting, you know, ready to vote. He's going to try to keep it away from the election. So obviously the man has, I would assume, a lot of proof that Trump has obstructed justice. I mean, he has that Lester Holt interview where Trump specifically said the Trump Russia thing,
you know.
That's why he fired Comey, which is plenty of proof right there. So I can only imagine, you know, Bob and I watched the other night, we watched The Fugitive, and I was kind of thinking in terms of like Tommy Lee Jones' character hunting Harrison Ford's character down. It's like Mueller is like the Tommy Lee Jones, except that Trump is nothing like the Harrison Ford character. But, you know, he's so rock solid. He's so smart. He understands what's going on and the gravity of this whole situation. And so I think that we will probably see something happen big in the springtime. It makes a lot of sense. And it seems like things are just under the surface, like moving. You know, we don't really see it, but we can feel rumblings. That's my
guess. And when people like Malcolm Nance speak, mm-hmm. I tend to sit down and pay attention.
Yeah.
Because the dude was so close to the action for so many years and has like that true insider's experience.
Yeah.
That, you know, he doesn't want to talk on MSNBC about these things if he doesn't have something to back it up.
Right. Yeah.
He's not fucking around. Exactly. He's not fucking around. Exactly. Please.
All right. Well, we're going to wrap this up and we're going to go into and another thing. You might want to stick around for this because we're going to be talking about Ken Cuccinelli's obsession with sodomy. Anyway, I just want to say that
I love life.
You can support the show by becoming a monthly subscriber at patreon.com/startmeup. You can support us with $1 a month or $5 a month, which is going to get you into And Another Thing, which is our next segment. And or you can pledge $55,000, or you can pledge $10, whatever you want, whatever you can afford. We would appreciate it because we're independent, and you know, that's how it goes when you're independent. You gotta ask people to support you. Anyway, alrighty. So get ready for sodomy talk in the next segment.